שלום, זהו פרק נוסף של הפודקאסט מה נעשה בערינו, המוקדש לקהילת האורבניסטים והאורבניסטיות בישראל. לי קוראים תומר שלוש, והפעם אני מזמין אתכם לדמיין אינטרנט של עצים ורחובות שפורחים. גרטה לואו היא אומנית אוסטרלית שחיה ויוצרת במינכן. בקיץ האחרון היא הוזמנה להציג יצירה חדשה שלה שנקראת The Commons. התרגום העברי יחטיא קצת, אבל אפשר לתרגם את זה בתור נחלת הכלל, המרחבים הציבוריים, אולי השטח המשותף. משמעות נוספת של common הוא שגור, יומיומי, פשוט, עממי. אני התלהבתי מאוד מהיצירה הזו, ואני חושב שזו הזדמנות נהדרת לחשוב על המקום שאומנות יכולה למלא בחשיבה מחדש על המרחב הציבורי שלנו. לואו עשתה שימוש בשלטי חוצות, שטחי פרסום בולטים במרחב הציבורי, כדי לבטא תהיות כמו דמיינו אינטרנט של עצים, וגם מים הרחובות היו פורחים. היא קוראת לזה מיני שיר, או בהקשר אחר, מקסים. כלומר, אמירה שנלקחת כמובנת מאליה, שאין צורך להוכיח אותה. זו יצירה מאוד פשוטה ואלגנטית, אבל גם עמוקה ומעלה שאלות על היחסים שבין מרחב ציבורי למרחב פרטי בעיר, ועל היחסים שבין כבישים ומכוניות לבין שטחים פתוחים וירוקים. היצירה ממשיכה לחיות גם במרחב הווירטואלי. ייכנסו לקישור בהערות הפרק או פשוט חפשו The Commons באינסטגרם ותוכלו לראות אותה. השיעתוק של היצירה למרחב הווירטואלי מאפשר לנו לחוות אותה שוב, אחרי שהיא למעשה סיימה להיות מוצגת. אבל יותר מכך, נוצרת הקבלה מסקרנת בין שלטי חוצות בעיר לבין מודעות בתשלום באינסטגרם. כך אנחנו נחשפים לאופן שבו מה שנחזה להיות מרחב ציבורי עם שיח פתוח, אופליין או אונליין, הוא למעשה מרחב פרטי ממוסחר. אז הזמנתי את גרטה לואו לשיחה באנגלית, ראו הוזהרתם. העמקנו לתוך החשיבה שלה על היחס שבין ערים לאינטרנט, על המשמעות של מרחב ציבורי בימים האלה במיוחד, ועל האופן שבו אומנות עוזרת לנו לדמיין ערים טובות יותר. בסוף תשמעו אותי שוב בעברית עם סיכום קצר של הנקודות שהעלינו. האזנה נעימה.
Okay, Greta, hello. Thank you for joining
me. Thank you for having me.
This is quite an unusual episode that we have of the podcast for urbanists in Israel. So please introduce yourself.
Thank you. So I am an artist. I was born in South Africa, but grew up in Australia, and I currently live in Munich, Germany. I've been living in Germany for about 13 years now, so I have exhibited a lot here, I mean in Germany, in the UK, in Spain, but also in the States and in Australia as well. So I've also done some work in Tel Aviv.
Oh, really?
I was at a residency there in 2011. So it's, you know, I'm very lucky that that sort of international aspect is a significant part of my career, my practice. And I typically work across a range of digital media, installation, and more recently textiles.
I'll also mention that as an artist you have received numerous awards, being so modest you are, including an Australia Council Career Development Grant, a visual art prize from the Cultural Department of the City of Munich, and several more prizes that are named in German, and I will be amiss to try and say their names.
But we're here today to talk about a public art project,
the Commons, the latest work that you put up in a public space in Munich, is that right?
Mm-hmm. You know, so when I was approached by the City of Munich to consider a public artwork, they had the theme of publics. I mean, obviously it's a German title, Öffentlichkeiten, but that translates to publics, which I thought was interesting that they put it in the plural. But then, you know, in thinking about what I would want to do if I was to do a public artwork, I was very interested in bringing this sort of digital aspect into it as well, because, you know, when we're thinking about public space today, there are so many sort of overlaps and so many ways in which the digital sort of inserts itself into the physical space, and, you know, conversely, the way that our physical spaces and our shared spaces are changed through, you know, our experience of the digital space as well.
And you were approached by the city to create this work of art in a park in the city, is that right?
Basically, they keep it very open. So there's sort of a fixed budget. The requirement is that it's a public artwork of some kind, that it in some way addresses the thematic topic for that year, which, as I said, this year was publics. And it must be ephemeral. So it can't be a sculpture, a bronze or something like that that's going to stay there forever. It needs to be something that's going to kind of come, be experienced by the you know, inhabitants of the area and then fade away.
So in a sense, the commons, the work of art that you exhibited, it came to an end, but in a sense, it's still running in Instagram, in the digital world, even though it's not present in the park or in the urban landscape of Munich. So that's one of the things I think that the commons is trying to refer to. Maybe if we were to kind of describe the commons, how would you describe that work of art?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's a custom installation across 12 billboards in the city. That was the physical installation, and each of those billboards has a very sort of graphic message on it. It's just a monochrome background with a black text on it. So in that sense, it's also almost a sort of work of poetry, I guess. You know, one of the main parts in the preparation for me was actually writing, you know, and trying to distill down these 12 messages. There was an essay written about the piece where they were described as maxims, which I think is also a nice description. And then equally important to that was this online component where I had an Instagram page. I was posting another additional set of messages. I think there were 11. That were posted as social media posts on Instagram. And then those were also commercialized. So I used the Instagram advertising algorithms to promote the posts in a similar way that I was using these commercial advertising spaces in public space. I was doing the same thing within the digital space of Instagram and targeting those ads to specific people and then sort of going through a process of trying to expose those advertising algorithms that work in Instagram by posting a comment on each of the promoted posts to let people know exactly why they were being shown this targeted ad.
You wrote in the comments to that post, you're seeing this because Instagram thinks that you're interested in this or that.
Yes.
And in that sense, you tried to expose the viewer to the mechanism that is allowing for them to see it.
Exactly.
And I think that's interesting also because you in the urban landscape, you put up the work of art on poster ads that usually would have commercials on, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, they're totally commercial spaces. So I used a totally normal process that I would have also used if I'd been trying to advertise mobile phones or fashion or anything like that. So yeah, I think the idea was very much to sort of use these communication modes that are usually reserved for commercial and capitalist purposes, essentially, you know, in doing so, both in public space and also on Instagram, to really make it clear that, you know, we have these incredible communication channels that are set up within our space, whether it be online or offline. And they are, you know, almost to 100%, you know, apart from the occasional political advertising perhaps, but they are, you know, almost to 100% reserved for capitalist commercial commodifying purposes, you know. And I think that's kind of a shocking thing to think about, you know, that that's what we give all of that space to. You know, we have no similar you know, counterpoint space where we can talk about things that are of social importance, or where we can talk about, you know, things that are of importance to a specific community in a specific area. You know, there are no modes of communication for that. They are all reserved for this commercial purpose.
I think one of the texts that you put up in either in the Instagram account or in the Commons in the urban landscape, if there are ads, your attention is for sale.
Yeah, that was, you know, very much trying to direct, I suppose, you know, it's not that one's not revolutionary in any way. I mean, I think for people that are aware, you know, a platform like Instagram is a private space, actually. It's not a public space. But I think what I wanted to do was to just inject that message in a very clarified, direct form back into that platform, because I think the way that we use a lot of these social media is as though they were public, but of course they are not. They're for profit. We are governed by the rules of a private company, not by any sort of rules or norms of a society or a political system that we have any sort of say in.
So you are addressing an issue that is sometimes trying to play itself hidden in the urban landscape. How commercialized our urban landscape is.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, in Tel Aviv, where I'm located right now, the commercial billboards were given to a major international company to operate, mm-hmm. but some of them were reserved for the city to use. So the municipality mm-hmm. is putting up ads that are supposed to go out to the community, to the residents of Tel Aviv, but it is a small percentage of all the ad space that is in the city.
What sort of messages is the municipality then putting up there? Are they things like health announcements and things like that?
So it would usually be about events that residents can attend, kind of cultural events, maybe publicizing a new workspace within a community center. Mm-hmm. So it is, I think, a good thing that a part of the commercialized space is reserved for the city to use.
Yeah.
And I think maybe the extra mile would be giving residents who are trying to get their message across to other residents, maybe let them have some say into what's going up on the billboards used by the city. But I was interested in another text that you put up. Imagine an internet of trees.
A lot of these maxims that I wrote, I wanted them to be something like a mini poem, something that is evocative, that creates an image in your mind, that makes you think, but that isn't necessarily simplified or resolved in some way, you know, because I think, as you were talking about these advertising spaces that are reserved for the municipality and what that would be like if the municipality in turn turned some of that space over to citizen groups or something like that. You know, I'm aware that I'm one person, I'm an artist with one point of view. I'm also an immigrant here in Germany. And I wouldn't ever want to make a statement that is, that's closed in some way or that has a sort of moralizing tone, I suppose. I'm more interested in provoking an imagination, getting people to think more consciously about the space that they're moving through.
I think the equivalent of the imagine an internet of trees that you put up on the Instagram account of the Commons, the equivalent in the real world, so to speak, is the imagine every parked car is a tree.
Yeah.
So looking at the Commons, you would see parked cars along the street and then billboards that are usually reserved for commercials selling a new phone or a new product. And instead you get the text put up saying, imagine every parked car is a tree. I'm trying to ask it in a way that wouldn't be like, try to explain yourself. But what was the feeling that you wanted people to feel, or what did you think that people would feel seeing that? Seeing this message across from a line of parked cars?
I think doing something like this in public space, you have to try to put yourself into the shoes of somebody just experiencing it, you know, without any sort of background. But also, of course, that's, you have to accept that that's sort of impossible, because the public, you know, when you're doing something in public space, there are so many different people who see that. And it's such a, you know, that's one of the beautiful things about it, you know, far more so than in a white cube gallery setting, you're really reaching people who have very, very different interests. And so that's a great example to talk about it with, because for me, it was very much a product, I think, of sitting in the first lockdown in March and April and some of May. During lockdown, of course, there wasn't very much traffic on the roads at all. And so I was just looking out onto this, you know, really quite broad area. On either side of this fairly broad street, there's a strip of additional road that's for car parking. And then we have a bus route on the street. And then when you've got a section of paved or tarred, in some cases, footpath on either side as well, you know, that's like probably 20, 25 meters, maybe even more, just wide. And then, of course, it goes all the way down the block, and there's, you know, other large streets around us. I'm sure everybody had this experience. It was just such a sort of unique mental landscape that was created during this time as well, of sort of being very much indoors like a fish in a fishbowl and looking outside in this new way. And I just one day had this kind of daydream about, you know, honestly, what would this experience be like if that street out there was all just a forest or a garden or, you know, an allotment where all of the people, my neighbors and I, could plant vegetables or something.
So I think this is a very important statistics to bring in. Most North American cities would have about a third to a half of their space dedicated to roads and sidewalks. So a lot of people think about the public space being a park or a green area in their vicinity, but actually the largest open space in a city is its roads.
Yes.
And as an artist, you were walking those roads that became surprisingly empty, and try to reimagine them. And I think that's the beautiful role that urban artists have. And I wanted to ask you, I think that the commons is addressing several issues about capitalism, about social media, about urban nature, about public space, and the relation between all of these issues and cities and urban areas. But it seems that cities thrive on the success of commercializing their space. So what is their role? Should they put up a fight and maybe give residents the tools to try and kind of mitigate the impact of the commercializing of urban space? Maybe they should just raise their hands in defeat and say, well, what can we do? We need this to create a better city for our residents.
Yeah, it's incredibly complicated, of course. And just as one example of the complexity of this issue, you know, I mentioned before my thinking behind the Imagine Every Parked Car is a Tree poster or billboard, which for me was very much just a sort of whimsical, beautiful, utopian sort of vision, and just sort of saying, hey, let's think about how else this could be. Let's not just necessarily accept the way that things have always been and therefore perpetuate that. But what was interesting about that was, you know, I had a lot of conversations, of course, with people, and the project received quite a bit of media attention here. And it was really interesting to me that even people who I would perceive as being, you know, quite liberal and progressive and not necessarily, you know, heavily invested in the sort of automotive lobby that exists very strongly here in Germany, who felt quite attacked by that poster, that by that billboard, because, you know, if they live in the inner city and if they have a car, parking is a real everyday problem. You know, it might be something that some of these people spend half an hour dealing with every day or more. I don't know, you know.
And then you go about saying, just imagine that that you would have even less parking for me to have more trees.
Exactly, exactly. You know, and I get that, you know, it's really tight. Space in the city is limited. So of course, you know, I wouldn't expect or suggest that the city of Munich or any other city decide, you know, per se that they're just going to remove all of these parking bays. There has to be thinking around that, you know, like what are the other alternatives? When you walk through the city and you see how much space is used for driving cars, but then also parked cars. And it's a really interesting question, I think, because parked cars are private property on public property. And so that each privately owned car that's parked on a public road is essentially claiming public space for the use of that private person. And, you know, where I live a little bit out of the center, I mean, it's still totally urban here, but there are a lot of people that park caravans and things here, you know, if they use them on the holidays, but then they really stay there for months and months. So that's then not a sort of fleeting use of public space for private, you know, advantage. It's a very long-term use of that. And, you know, what would really be beneficial to a city?
I think that your insight about the fact that a person driving a car and parking it on a public on public real estate is actually privatizing a public space. Now, your call to imagine a tree instead of a parking spot is actually saying something like, imagine this place won't be privatized on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I am very sensitive to the fact that, you know, people have different needs within a city, and you know, somebody who is not able to walk long distances, for example, I have a neighbor who, for whom that's the case, because of health concerns and various issues, she really needs her car. Like, that is a necessity for her. So even when I was having this kind of daydream about gardens, imagine just how beautiful that would be, just these long strips of gardens or forests or allotments, you know, instead of roads. But of course, there still has to be provision made for people for whom walking to the end of the block wouldn't be possible. So, you know, it is definitely a sort of push and pull, and we really have to be sensitive about how we think about these things, even in a utopian way. But yes, I mean, for the majority of people who have cars, it's more of either a comfort thing. For a lot of people in Munich, at least, it's a thing that they would use on the weekends to get out of the city and explore the mountains. There's a huge amount of really, you know, natural beauty and majesty around Munich, so that it's more sort of a weekend thing than a during the week thing. But in those cases, you know, even it's the case would be even stronger for having sort of centralized car storage units that are readily accessible by public transport, and having a kind of consolidation of those weekend touring vehicles on the outskirts of the city in some way. Just one idea, and maybe it's a bad idea, I don't know. But I suppose the thing for me is just, you know, especially going through a time like this time where we're really experiencing the city in these totally new ways, can we try to reassess everything? Can we try to think about what our absolute dream would be rather than just kind of tinkering with, you know, things like parking permits for residents only, or, you know, implementing a parking meter that isn't available over, you know, at certain times, you know, these kinds of things, which to me are such sort of minor tweaks on a behemoth of a system that you know, has immense impact on all of us, but it somehow gets ignored because it's been there for so long, and that's the way it's always been, so it never really gets questioned.
Of course, I think that using the word behemoth is quite relevant for the global crisis that we are in, climate change. What you're saying about the relation between the public and the private here is incredibly important for urban life. And in that sense, I wanted to bring in kind of something from my recollection. There's a famous Hebrew writer, Hebrew novelist. His name is Aleph Bet Yehoshua. And he said something about the role of artists or authors and writers in the world. He said that artists, in a sense, are like the drops of oil on the gears of history. So the gears that are spinning, they would spin anyway, but artists, in a sense, give the extra oil that is needed to put the motion in. And I think that this is the role that that artists have in urban areas, kind of letting people know that they can reimagine their urban space. And I think this is why the Commons is such a great work of art. I also wanted to tell to our listeners that I put the link to your website, specifically to the Commons, in your website, so they will be able to click the link and read a little bit more and see a little bit more of what we described.
Yeah, thank you for that, Tamir.
One more thing. You put up the messages in English. Being in Munich, you would imagine that the messages would be in German.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, the choice of language is also a political thing. And, you know, English is a colonial language. So the use of English as a sort of international, in quotes, language is political in itself. And I'm very aware of that. And, you know, I did think a lot about this in advance, so sort of the critique that I was opening myself up to from that standpoint. And I'm aware of the huge privilege that I have as a native English speaker that, you know, if I was a Turkish artist, for example, I wouldn't have the choice of using my native language for a public artwork in Germany. But as a native English speaker, I do. But yeah, I mean, ultimately it came down to two things. One was definitely the reach, the question of reach. English is, you know, from a practical standpoint, quite an inclusive language for the most part. I mean, I don't think we would be talking now if I'd written these posters in German.
Exactly that.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of other people that I've had really interesting dialogues with as well, the same thing. So there was that. And then also on top of that, you know, it's an artwork that uses words in a very particular way. And I was trying to avoid saying anything that's too sort of dialectical or too much like a, you know, a sort of directive in some way. So I have more creative freedom writing in my native language. So that was a sort of another factor. But yeah, I mean, reach was really the biggest one, and particularly because this online section of the project was as important to me as the offline section. I wanted to make that inclusive. The other part of it is that Munich is actually a very international city. So, you know, I mean, I think there's, yeah, I mean, there's that aspect as well that, you know, it's, I wouldn't necessarily assume that everybody who's reading it here is German, you know.
So from that, I think maybe it is a kind of an advantage. Maybe more cities will be enjoying the Commons in the future. I think it is a very thought-provoking kind of work of art, and I would imagine it working well in other cities as well. And one more thing that I wanted to ask you is, how did people react to the Commons? You said one thing about people maybe thinking that imagining a tree instead of a car spot that kind of stimulated people. Were there any other interesting reactions? I especially wanted to know if there was a reaction to what I think is just beautifully written, and consider this a love letter to public green space?
There was actually a lot of response, which, you know, is very gratifying, of course, as an artist. But even more importantly than that, it for me, it's always a signal that I touched on something that was important to touch on. It was really gratifying to see, you know, online, but also hear from people that some of the billboards really summed up their experience. So one of the ones that I think that was most common about was there was a one billboard. It was three in three locations, the same billboard that said, now I'm going to quote myself incorrectly, but it said something like, the less private space you own, the more public space you need. And that was something that for me became abundantly clear during lockdown as well, because, you know, some people are being advertised a lot of online as well, of course, a lot of services about how to make their gardens into, you know, a personal paradise and all of this kind of thing. But if you live in a small apartment with no balcony and, you know, a family, then of course the experience of lockdown was very different than if you live in a single family home with a big garden, you know, where you could be outside feeling completely safe and separated from other people. So, you know, that was one thing that got a lot of feedback. And then the one that you mentioned, consider this a love letter to public green space. That was honestly just really sincere, I think, for me. It was really just how I felt in the time during, I was writing all of these during lockdown. And, you know, just being out every day here in Germany, we were during the lockdown allowed to go out for 1 hour-ish, or, you know, sort of one session per day of exercise. And just seeing how everybody was out and, you know, the way that I was looking at trees and, you know, during that time in April, all of the trees here were blossoming. But also noticing other people doing the same, you know, the way that we were sitting on the grass and just soaking up the sun, you know, we're trying to kind of be in these green spaces and photosynthesize ourselves, you know, to try to sort of really soak all of that up. Trees, sunshine, grass, the sky, clouds, you know, those sort of absolutely basic natural beauties that really I think are a healing balm to our senses. And I mean, that's not just my opinion. Like there's a lot of research about this.
You have studied, you've majored in psychology, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Many years ago.
There is a lot of research on the effect of urban nature on people's health, especially mental health. And,
yeah.
And it's interesting also because when Israel went into a second lockdown, we were only allowed out for a range of 1,000 meters from our homes.
Right.
And I put up on my Facebook profile kind of a map that is showing my 1,000 meter radius. Mm-hmm. And I said, let's play a game. Go into this website. There's a website that you can pinpoint your location and see what's in your 1,000 meters radius. Let's play a game. If you have a coffee place within 1,000 meters, you get 3 points. And if you got a mm-hmm. kindergarten within 1,000 meters, you get 4 points. And mm-hmm. I tried to give points on the basis of rarity, in the sense that, mm-hmm. for example, a high school would be more rare to have within your reach, much more rare than a kindergarten or something. And I gave only 1 point to a park, or an urban kind of pocket garden that you would normally have within a vicinity of 500 meters from your house in Tel Aviv. And a good friend of mine, she wrote to me that this is craziness to give mm-hmm. park just 1 point, because it was a lifesaver for mm-hmm. them to have that green space outside of their house, much more than all the other amenities that cities offer you,
right.
Especially in this time. But I think it only kind of gave more emphasis on the necessity of urban nature.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, and you really see, it was something that I was thinking about a lot here, the way that cities are greened, you know, the greenery that is accessible to residents of different areas in each city is a very political thing. One of the things that we did a lot of during the lockdown was riding our bikes to get out further. We didn't luckily have any radius limit on our movement. It was more about where you should go and where you should not go and those sorts of things. So we would hop on our bikes and ride further out of the city from where we are. There's a huge big sort of natural forest area, so we would sometimes ride down there. But to get there, we would ride through these beautiful villa neighborhoods that exist on the very edges of the city. And it's sort of ironic because those places, you know, are made up mostly of mansions, and a lot of them are old here, so they're particularly beautiful and have particularly beautiful old trees and things like that. And each mansion has its own big garden, so the area is very green. But then on top of that, the streets are laid out in this way that's very luxurious. So each street has a sort of, you know, that green verge, like with its own trees on it and grass and things like that, which of course it isn't a park, and you know, you wouldn't let your kids play there, but it certainly provides a lush atmosphere. It provides that sort of green forest bathing that people talk about, the psychological impacts of that. And that's in a neighborhood where each family almost always already has its own private or semi-private garden behind a wall, and then on top of that these street gardens. Whereas, you know, where I live, there are a couple of, I'm lucky enough to have a couple of parks near us, but the streets are not green at all, and
that's the reason that you're saying that it is, that green spaces is sort of a political issue.
Absolutely,
because there are those who have and those who don't have that
right space. But it's even more than that, because it's, you know, even the ones that do have, then they're given this extra from the kind of urban planning, because those neighborhoods were laid out in such a way as to have shared greenery just for the beauty of it, you know, not for a private garden. And you know, those, they're not building many of those places into the new developments that they're building, or into, you know, the sort of more heavily occupied areas where there's big apartment buildings and things. You would think that those are the areas that need even more green verges with trees and things like that, but they have them much less.
I just wanted to wrap things up. It was really intriguing to hear your thoughts. A big thank you on behalf of the urbanist community in Israel, and hopefully another round in Tel Aviv.
Oh, yeah. Anytime. Just tell the municipality to look me up. Thanks, Tomer.
Thank you, Greta.
האזנתם לשיחה שלי עם האמנית גרטה לואו על יצירת האמנות שלה, The Commons. הנה כמה נקודות שאני חושב שכדאי לקחת ממנה. קודם כל, אמנות במרחב העירוני יכולה להפרות את הדמיון. אפשר ללכת עם זה עוד צעד קדימה ולחשוב על יצירות אמנות שלא רק מוצבות במרחב, אלא גם גורמות לנו לחשוב עליו מחדש. למה זה לא ככה כל הזמן, או בכל מקום? דוגמה מהזמן האחרון שאני חוויתי בעצמי, בפסטיבל אוהבים אמנות עושים אמנות שנערך בתל אביב באמצע נובמבר 2020, האמן הלל רומן הציב את היצירה שלו בית גבוה. זו למעשה מרפסת עץ עם מעקה מתכת שהותקנה על אחד העצים בסדרות רוטשילד. היה אפשר פשוט לטפס אליה ממפלס הרחוב ולראות את הסדרה מגובה של כמה מטרים באוויר. או פשוט אפשר לומר שזה נתן לאנשים להרגיש כמו ילדים שמטפסים לבית על העץ. כמה מהתושבים באזור כל כך התרשמו מהיצירה שהם אפילו פנו לעירייה וביקשו להשאיר אותה. נקודה שנייה שאני חושב שהיא מעניינת זה עד כמה המרחב הציבורי שלנו לא באמת ציבורי. שלטי החוצות בעיר מנוהלים ברובם על ידי תאגידים בינלאומיים שכל המטרה שלהם היא להניב תשואה לבעלי המניות. המחשבה הזו צפה דווקא בזכות ההקבלה בין כיכר העיר האמיתית, המרחב הציבורי הממשי שאנחנו יכולים ללכת דרכו, לעבור דרכו, לבין כיכר העיר הווירטואלית, שהיא הרשתות החברתיות. אגב, אחד מהמיני שירים של גרטה לואו היה דמיינו רשת חברתית שהיא באמת חברתית, כלומר למען החברה ולא למטרות רווח. האם אנחנו יכולים לדמיין עיר שבה המרחב הציבורי מנוהל לא למטרות רווח, או פחות למטרות רווח, ויותר למטרות חברתיות? נקודה שלישית ואחרונה היא כמובן היחס שבין הפרטי לציבורי, והאופן שבו אנחנו משתמשים במרחב העירוני. המיני שיר, דמיינו שכל מכונית שחונה כאן היא עץ, באמת חושף את העובדה שהרבה מהשטח בערים שלנו, הרבה מהשטח הציבורי בערים שלנו, מנוצל לאחסון של רכוש פרטי. ולא סתם רכוש פרטי, אלא גם כזה שמזיק לבריאות שלנו, מכוניות. ועוד יותר מזה, המרחב העירוני מתחלק לאלו שיש להם ולאלו שאין להם. לואו בעיקר התרשמה מכל אותם בתים שנמצאים בפרברי מינכן, עם השטחים הירוקים, הפרטיים והציבוריים שעומדים לרשותם. אני מדמיין של אלו גם הנהנים העיקריים ממקומות החניה במרכז העיר היכן שהיא גרה. כלומר, אלו שיש להם מרוויחים פעמיים. גם שטחים ירוקים רבים יותר, קרוב לבית, וגם מקומות חניה זמינים במרכז העיר. בעוד שאלו שאין להם מפסידים פעמיים. גם השטחים הירוקים הגדולים נמצאים רחוק יותר מהבית, וגם אין להם צורך במקומות החניה שבמרכז העיר. הם בעיקר משרתים את מי שמגיע מבחוץ ומפייח להם את האוויר. לי קוראים תומר שלוש. זה היה פרק נוסף של הפודקאסט מהנעשה בערינו, המוקדש לקהילת האורבניסטיות והאורבניסטים בישראל. תודה על ההאזנה.